We're on Samach Beis Amid Beis at the second line from the bottom, the second last word on the line where it says, Ella. We've been discussing the topic of placing an order for produce and the possibility that that type of transaction could be forbidden as avak ribis, as rabbinically forbidden interest. That is, we will learn a Mishnah later in the Parakayin Beis Amid Beis that it could be an issue for a person to place an order of produce, that is, to pay in advance with the arrangement that throughout the year, let's say, the seller will deliver the produce at the agreed-upon rates. The issue is that what if the price for that produce goes up later, yet the buyer is going to continue to take delivery of the produce at that original better rate, and so this could be construed as a reward for the fact that he paid in advance, for the fact that he waited on his money, which we could construe as a kind of a loan. So he's being rewarded for that loan, the fact that he gets the original better price. He gets more, let's say, wheat today than someone else could purchase on the open market. And so at this point, it could make the transaction rabbinically forbidden. However, there are two significant exceptions to this rule. First, we have the exception of Yeshlo. That is, that if at the time the two parties entered into this agreement, the seller had the amount of ordered produce in stock, then the whole thing is not an issue. For even if the buyer doesn't take a physical delivery immediately, in regards to the rabbinic issue of ribbis, that it kind of looks like ribbis, we view it as if the buyer already took ownership of the produce, so that there's no ribbis issue to speak of. Obviously, if somebody purchases some item, pays for that, and literally takes ownership of it, and then it goes up in value later, that's not a problem of ribbis because if there's no loan whatsoever, the transaction is over. So too, as long as the seller does have the produce in stock and just the buyer prefers to take delivery later, that's not going to be an issue at all. We'll view it, again, in that case, as if the produce that already belonged to the buyer went up in value later. In addition, we learned, even if the seller doesn't actually have the produce in stock at the time of the order, if it was Yatze Shar, is already an established prevailing market price at which one could obtain the produce in question. In that situation as well, it won't be an issue from the standpoint of ribbis for the person to pay in advance and say, I'm going to take delivery later. For although this particular vendor doesn't have the produce in question in stock, it is obtainable at the price they agreed on. Now, all the merchants now are offering the produce at that price. And therefore, from the standpoint of ribbis, we say that, again, although the buyer has decided not to physically take delivery now, since it could relatively easily be obtained, we view the developments of the produce going up in value as happening to produce that already essentially belongs to the buyer, so that there's no ribbis problem. And then we come to our Mishnah, which uses a case of somebody who pays in advance to take delivery of produce later as an example of avak ribbis, of rabbinically forbidden ribbis. So the Mishnah tells the whole story. At first, Reuven had purchased from Shimon 25 dinar of wheat. That was the going rate. At the time, he placed an order for that, did not take delivery of it immediately. Said, I'll take delivery later. Meanwhile, the price for wheat went up to 30 dinar per car. But of course, per their original agreement, Reuven was still entitled to the full car, even though he only paid 25. And Reuven came over to the seller, Shimon. He said, okay, I'd like to take delivery now of the car, the 30 dinars amount of wheat, as I would like to use that to purchase that amount of wine. Shimon said, hey, why don't I sell you the wine? And so they agreed that Shimon's debt to Reuven of 30 dinars for wheat should be converted into a debt for 30 dinars amount of wine. But the Mishnah said, Shimon did not have the wine in stock at the time. The Mishnah says, this would be an example of avak ribbis. Because maybe between the time of this updated order and when Shimon actually delivers the wine, the price for wine will go up. And that could be construed as a kind of reward for Reuven essentially extending this loan. He, again, paid in advance, so essentially extended the loan in exchange for the benefit of locking in the cheaper price, benefiting from getting the wine at what will be later considered a better rate later on. So this is forbidden as avak ribbis. It's rabbinically forbidden ribbis. Gemara objected, why should this be forbidden at all? True, the Mishnah said that at the time of the updated order, Shimon didn't have the wine in stock. But so what? True, you can't redeem this transaction from a ribbis problem on the basis of the factor of Yeshlo. The seller has the stuff in stock, he doesn't have it in stock. But what about the other redeeming factor of Yotze Ashar? That is, the Mishnah indicates that at the time of the agreement already, there was an established price at which one could obtain the wine. And they went by that going rate for wine. So being that there's a going rate, you can go to some other merchant and get that amount of wine at the agreed upon rates. Shouldn't be an issue. We should say that, okay, it's very easily obtainable. Therefore, we view it as if the buyer already took possession of the wine, so that, okay, if it goes up later, so what? That's just his own already acquired merchandise going up in value. Not an issue of ribbis at all. So why does the Mishnah say that, in fact, no, this is forbidden as a vak ribbis? Rabba yesterday answered that the ribbis issue is not removed from this case based on the fact that there's an established price for wine because of the fact that Reuven did not make any kind of cash payment for the wine. Instead, Reuven agreed that Shimon could pay the prior debt owed to him, to Reuven, with the wine. So in such a case, you can't remove the ribbis issue by saying there's no problem, you could just still get the wine from some other merchant at the agreed upon price. For who says the seller Shimon is able to do that here where he didn't receive any cash from Reuven? Seems like actually, Shimon is strapped for cash. He's transferring his balance. He's saying, all right, I'll get this money back to you in the form of wine. So Rabba argued that the fact that the rate that the parties agreed to for the wine is well established, you can get wine at that price elsewhere, is not a redeeming factor here. Again, the buyer didn't pay any cash at this time for the order. Rather, we say essentially that Reuven here is receiving a benefit for the fact that he's extending the original loan to Shimon. Rabba brought a proof to his approach from a brisa. Brisa states explicitly this very point that if money isn't changing hands at the time of the order, rather the buyer is paying based on an earlier debt that the seller owes him, then the fact that there's an established market price for the produce in question doesn't help. It does not sanitize the transaction from the issue of avak ribbis. But Abaye pointed out that the very brisa that Rabba quotes to prop up his approach proves to be his undoing. Rabba's own brisa clearly implies that if the customer is not paying cash when he's placing this order, he's again just using a prior debt that the seller owes him, then it's forbidden as avak ribbis, even if the seller has the produce in question in stock. Even if you have yeshlo, that doesn't help either. Meanwhile, our Mishnah clearly indicates that the order here for the wine is only ultimately forbidden because the Mishnah takes pains to mention Shimon did not have the wine in stock at the time, clearly implying that if Shimon did have the wine in stock, the transaction would not be forbidden, notwithstanding the fact that Reuven is not paying any cash at this time. He's just using that previous debt that Shimon owes him. Nevertheless, the Mishnah implies that it wouldn't be forbidden from the standpoint of avak ribbis if Shimon had the produce in stock. So Abaye went on to suggest a whole different approach for the Mishnah. Rava took strong issue with Abaye's approach, noting that in several ways it doesn't seem to fit with the Mishnah's wording. So Rava rejected Abaye's approach. And that's essentially where we left off yesterday. Today we pick up with Rava's own approach. And fortunately, it won't be necessary to try and familiarize herself with the whole new approach for the Mishnah. But Rava's approach is identical to Rabba's approach. Just that Rava is able to address the problem that Abaye had pointed out, that Rabba's own brisa that he wants to use as a basis to explain our Mishnah seems to contradict our Mishnah. And Rava finds a way out of that problem. It is Ella Omer Rava. Rather, Rava said, Kishechivna Rabbi Oshaya Nafak Levasi. Rava declared that when I die, Rabbi Oshaya is going to come out of his high place in Shemayim to give me a special warm greeting. And of appreciation for the fact, continuing to Samach Gimbal and Aleph, the Mitaratsna Masnisin Kavase, that through my life I went to great efforts to explain the Mishnayos of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi with his, Rabbi Oshaya's Braisos. We know the Braisos of Rabbi Oshaya and Rabbi Chia are the authoritative Braisos. Rav on many occasions used the Braisos of Rabbi Oshaya to elucidate the Mishnayos. So Rava said, I'm sure of Yoshaya greatly appreciates that I often bring his brises into the discussion and give them a deservedly prominent role in elucidating the Mishnayos. And Rava now reveals the specific brise of Rabbi Yoshaya that he uses in our conversation. That is the Tani Rabbi Yoshaya, that the Rava presented a brise yesterday that stakes out one position, but Rabbi Yoshaya taught a brise which stakes out a different position on the specific question of how does it work if he's ordering not with cash, he's using a prior debt, but where the seller does have the produce in stock. Now, is it going to be an issue of avak ribis in that case? Rabbi Yoshaya's brisa teaches. Let's say Reuven had a claim against Shimon of one mana. Shimon owed Reuven one mana or 25 sela. V'halach v'amid al garno. So Reuven approached Shimon when Shimon was standing at his threshing floor. V'omar. Reuven asked if Shimon tein li ma'osai sheni rotz alikach ben chitin. Please pay up. I want the 25 sel, the mana, for I wish to use that money to purchase wheat. V'yamrlo, Shimon proposed, I actually have the amount of wheat you're seeking in stock. So how about seva asan alai kishar shalachshav? Let's update our agreements that now I owe you a 25 dinars worth of wheat at the current market price for wheat. Reuven accepted this proposal. The intention of taking delivery of the wheat later. Then later, Igiyas Manchitin Limchar, when it was time for a person, if he has wheat to sell, or it would make sense to sell, for there was less supply, so the price was going up. This was the time to sell wheat. At that time, Amr Lo Tein Chitin, Reuven asked Hashem, okay, please give me the wheat that you agreed you'd give me. She'ani Rotsa Lamocha Malikach Ben Yayin. I'd like to sell that amount of wheat we originally agreed on, and use the money to purchase wine. And here too, Shimon countered with a new proposal. He said, I could save you time now as well. I have the amount of wine that you seek. So Shimon proposed, if you want, we could just update our agreement that the price that we today would fetch, that I owe you that amount now in wine. However much wine one could purchase with that amount of money at the going rates. And Reuven accepted this latest offer. Then a similar thing happened all over again. Later it became an opportune time to sell wine. Prices were high for wine. So Reuven asked Shimon, okay, could you give me the wine? I'd like to sell that and use the proceeds to purchase oil. And lo and behold, Amrlo Shimon said, you know what? Shemin yeshli sheninos lecha. I have a bunch of oil. Let's agree that whatever proceeds you could get for the wine at today's prices, that I owe you the amount of oil that you could purchase with those proceeds at today's prices for oil. The Raisa considers, are these transactions, these different updated proposals, kosher from the standpoint of ribis? The Raisa says, kulam, at each point in this whole story, im yeshlo mutter. As long as Shimon actually did have the requested produce in question in stock, the wheat, the wine, the oil, if he really did have those things in stock at the time of the agreement, then all the agreements were fine. There was no ribis issue in any of the agreements. Ein lo aser. But if Shimon didn't actually have the ordered produce in stock at the time of the agreement, then it would be forbidden. It would definitely be avak ribis. For even though at each point the Braisa said there was the Yatzashar, there was an established price for the ordered produce, that doesn't help here since when it was in order for wine or oil, Reuven wasn't paying cash. It was Lav Kisura Baliado. He was paying with the prior debt that Shimon owed him. So as explained above, the fact that there's an established price for the ordered produce, it doesn't help in such a case. But what's clear from this Braisa? The Braisa states explicitly, if, however, Shimon did have that wine or oil in stock at the time of the updated agreement, then this would be perfectly fine, not be an issue of avak ribis at all, which is exactly in line with our Mishnah. Then again, our Mishnah stresses that in the end, when Reuven is paying for this wine, not with cash, but based on the prior debt owed to him by Shimon, We only forbid this. We only call this avak ribis if Shimon does it at the time of the wine in stock. But if he does, it's not avak ribis. If he has the wine in stock, then we could look at it as if Reuven already acquired the wine right then and there, at the time of the agreement, so that, you know, who cares if later it goes up. That doesn't create any kind of issue of ribis whatsoever. Because, you know, obviously if somebody buys something and later when he purchased goes up, we're not talking about a loan and being rewarded for a loan. And what loan? The purchase was already completed earlier. The buyer just decided to take delivery later. So what did Rav essentially do here? What he did was, he said we could go with Rabba's approach, just not use the proof that Rabba brought. We can't use Rabba's brice. So Rabba's brice indeed disagrees with our Mishnah. Rabba's brice again says that even where Shimon does have the wine in stock, it's still a problem if Reuven's not, you know, paying for that in cash at the time of the agreement. But Rabba says that's okay. For we have Rabbi Yoshaya's brice, which agrees with the exact position stated in our Mishnah, that although when the cash is not being paid, the fact that there's an established going rate for what's being ordered is not a redeeming factor, but the fact that the seller has the ordered produce in stock, that still is a redeeming factor. Even though the buyer's not paying cash, but if the seller has it in stock, that's not going to be a vak ribis. The Gemara continues with the words, Umay lokach lokach behavaso, but Rashi says we have to delete those words. So we continue now with a further comment of Rava on the brisa of Rabbi Yoshai that we just quoted. Amar Rava, Rava remarked, Shema minam in Rabbi Yoshaya talas. We may infer the following 3 points from this brisa of Rabbi Yoshaya. The first two that Rava mentions here really is just a reiteration of the points we just stated. That is, first of all, Shema minam, the mamiden milva algabe peros velo minan de loki isura baliyadahu. We once again learn from Rabbi Yoshaya's brisa that the fact that the buyer is doing this order to take delivery later is not right now paying in cash doesn't necessarily make the transaction forbidden as a vak ribis. Rava adds, Ushma mina hu diyeshlo. But the second point that emerges from Rabbi Yoshaya's brisa is that we only do not object to the fact that Reuven didn't pay cash in a case where Shimon has the ordered produce in stock at the time. If he doesn't, then the fact that Reuven didn't pay cash will make this a problem from the standpoint of ribis, even though there's an established price for the ordered produce. That in and of itself is not a redeeming factor. Because again, what does that help that the produce could be obtained from a different merchant at the agreed upon price if the seller has no cash to practically go and use and purchase it at that price now? So it is a problem. In other words, we do look at this transaction as a kind of advancing the money. It's a loan. He's extending this loan he originally gave him in exchange for locking in that more favorable price. And thus it would become a problem of rabbinically forbidden ribis. Rava continues, Yushma Mina. A third point that we infer from this rise of Rabbi Yoshaya is that Issa led the Rabbi Yanai. Is that the Rabbi Yoshaya apparently agrees with the opinion of Rabbi Yanai. The Yom Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Yanai who said, if somebody ordered some produce and did so in a legal fashion, meaning he paid in advance, but it was okay because, for example, the seller had that produce in stock, and once the transaction was set up in a permissible way, or free of any ribis problem, we permit the seller to substitute the originally agreed upon type of produce for a different type of produce. Like, for example, let's say the original order was for wheat. When comes time for delivery, you could replace that with wine. Rabbi Yanai argues, Mali hein, Mali demayin. What difference does it make whether he gives the stuff they agreed on or something else? After all, the buyer himself could take the original stuff and convert that into something else. So if the seller himself offers to substitute the original stuff for something else, the buyer agrees, that's not a problem. It doesn't, you know, introduce any problem of ribis. We see Rava pointed out that Rabbi Yoshaya agrees. For in Rabbi Yoshaya's Bryce, it says that's not an issue for these parties to later, you know, change to something else, change from wheat to wine to oil. Not a problem as long as from the outset, you know, the previous order didn't present any problem of ribis. The Gemara now gives us more of the background of this opinion of Rabbi Yanai de Itmar. There was the following dispute of Amarayim. Rav Amar, Rav said that Osin Amana bePeros, while it would be permissible under the right conditions to do an order for produce, by paying in advance, you know, taking delivery later, if at the time of the order the person in question already had an established price, that's not an issue. It does not present any issue of even rabbinic ribbis. However, Rav said, "Ve'ein osin amana bedamim." They can't do an agreement where the buyer says that if the produce that I'm ordering goes up in value later, then you, Mr. Seller, agree to give me the value of that, let's say in cash or in some other commodity. Doing that is forbidden. For that gives the transaction more of a resemblance to a ribbis transaction in which the buyer stipulates to receive a benefit in exchange for the fact that he is advancing this money to the seller. And even if this wasn't agreed in advance, even the idea of changing on the fly, if they, they later decide, oh, let's replace with something else, Rav holds that even that would be a problem. They would make it into a ribbisy kind of transaction. However, Rabbi Yane, as mentioned above, says, and now doing this kind of thing is fine, for we say, Mali hei nu mali demayan. What difference does it make? Since the agreement itself is not the ribbis agreement, based on the fact that, for example, the ordered produce has a going rate, there's an established price, so that we view it as basically the buyer already took possession halachically of the produce, just didn't take a physical delivery, and that produce then went up in value later. So what? That's not ribbis. Rabbi Yani argues that it doesn't become ribbis just because they later decide, the seller says, I'm going to replace it with something else, even cash. Not an issue, because the buyer himself could take the agreed-upon wheat and turn that into that same amount of cash. What's the difference? So if they agree that the seller will switch it for something else, it's not a problem that doesn't present any issue of ribbis. So now the Gemara says, Meisve, they challenge the opinion of Rav from Rabbi Shai's Braisa, which again said, Kulam im yesh lo mutter. Shai's Braisa talks about where multiple times they decided to switch, replace the originally agreed upon produce to something else, from the wheat to the wine to the oil. So the Braisa, as pointed out above, seems to bear out the opinion of Rabbi Yanai that doing this kind of substitution later is fine. As long as the original agreement wasn't to ribbis, the fact that they want to substitute later does not turn it into ribbis. So seemingly, Rabbi Yishai's Braisa refutes the opinion of Rav. More answers on Ravuna Marav. Ravuna said the name of Rav. Rav explained that what's the case of Rabbi Yishai's Braisa? It's Bishem Mashach. It wasn't merely this contract, this agreement, where the buyer paid and said, I'll take delivery later. But the buyer took the further step of performing Kinyan Meshicha, of actually or symbolically taking that produce into his possession. So if that happened, if the buyer literally performed a Kinyan on the produce he ordered, well then, of course, there'd be no ribbis issue to speak of. This cannot be construed in any way as a continuing loan. The transaction is over. So what if later they want to swap that wheat, let's say, that he acquired for wine? Of course, so why should that be an issue? The Gemara objects that how could we really say that that is the case of Rabbi Shai's Braisa Yibishem Mashach Tzricha L'Meimar? If the buyer literally already acquired the produce, then obviously there's no ribbis issue whatsoever. If they want to later trade that for something else, so what does that have to do with ribbis? We're not dealing with the loan in any sense. So the Gemara modifies the approach as follows. The Gemara says, Elo kigon sheyichelo keren zavis. Rav Huna Rav didn't mean that the buyer literally performed the kinyan, finished everything. He actually took delivery, became the owner of the produce. Rather, what he meant was that the seller designated a corner, let's say, of his premises, saying that the buyer has a right to make use of this section, that his produce is going to be stored in this particular area. Now, doing this, designating an area for the buyer, doesn't actually result in acquisition. The buyer doesn't literally become the owner. Yet, even Rav will agree that if this extra step was taken, then there won't be any kind of objection from the standpoint of ribbis. If they want to, let's say, change that later, substitute for something else. For from the standpoint of ribbis, the whole issue is a potential rabbinic avak ribbis problem. We, in this case, even according to Rav, are willing to view that produce as already in the buyer's jurisdiction, even if it isn't literally so. But okay, once he designated a place for it, that's good enough. It's harder to argue that the transaction could be construed as ribbis. So, in fact, does not present any issue of ribis, even if they decide to switch to a different produce later. Rabbeinu presents a different approach for how we may defend the opinion of Rav from this brice of Rabbi Yoshaya. It is Shmuel Amar. Shmuel suggested that we could say, Homani, who is the Tana behind Rabbi Yoshaya's brisa? Like, which Tana is Rabbi Yoshaya working with? Rabbi Yehuda. The Tana Rabbi Yehuda, the Omer Tzad, the Echad, the Ribis Mutter, holds that in regards to a transaction where at the time of the agreement we don't know what's going to unfold, it's merely a possibility. On one, so to speak, side of this, there's a possibility, depending on what happens, that this will emerge as an interest payment. In such a case, Rabbi Yehuda holds the transaction is not prohibited whatsoever. The Gemara will present the original case that Rabbi Yehuda discusses below, which we're saying that the case under discussion qualifies as tzad echad beribis, which will be permitted according to Rabbi Yehuda. So what do we have here? We have this person who ordered, say, the wheat, and certainly that order in and of itself wasn't a problem. The only potential problem is that if he later switches to something else, then that, yeah, would at that time, you know, create an appearance of a ribis payment. But being that that's, of course, not necessarily where this transaction would go, certainly a far cry from a case where a lender stipulates at the outset, you have to pay me beyond the principal. According to Rabbi Yehuda, this is not prohibited whatsoever. Rabbi Yoshaya in the Raisa follows the lenient opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. But meanwhile, Rav does not adopt the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rav agrees with the Rabbanon, Rabbi Yehuda's disputants, who say that the fact alone that it's tzad echad beribis, that at the outset the transaction won't necessarily end up as ribis, does not automatically make it permitted. No. If later things develop in a way where now this transaction can be construed as ribis, there will be a problem following that. Rav says you can't substitute the originally agreed upon produce. If you do that, it's harder to argue that, oh, the produce he purchased all along just went up. He really had it from the beginning. Not really, because he is delivering something else. So here it does kind of resemble that as reward for advancing the cash, for essentially extending this loan, he's getting a better deal on the produce actually being delivered. So that does present a ribis problem, says Rav. The one now provides more background for this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The opinion is presented in the Braisa. The Tanya, first time in the Braisa, Nareisha, Hayanosha, Bechavero, Mana. I say, Reuven had a claim against Shimon for one mana, for, let's say, a lent Shimon that amount. And to settle up for the debt, they agreed to do a conditional sale. That is, Shimon said to Reuven, here, take this field. In the event I don't pay you by the agreed upon date, then we're agreeing that the money that you extended to me should be considered a purchase price for the field that I'm handing to you today. If, however, I do come up with the money I pay you back before the agreed upon date, then I can take my field back. The question is, so who will keep what the field produces in the interim? And we're still waiting to see who ultimately take ownership of the field. The Braisa says, "Bizmancha mocher ocho peros mutter." The above arrangement will not be a problem as long as it is the seller slash debtor, Shimon, who keeps what the field produces in the interim. But lokeach ocho peros aser, the first opinion of the Braisa, the Rabbanan say, it would be forbidden for Reuven, the lender, who is also potentially the buyer of this field, would be forbidden for him to take the payers from the field in the interim due to the possibility that Shimon will come up with the money. He will pay Reuven back, in which case, clearly in retrospect, this would have been a loan where Reuven not only received the principal of the loan back, but also the additional payment of the payers from Shimon's field. That would be an interest payment. So because of that possibility, such an arrangement would be forbidden. So says the first opinion, the Rabbanan. However, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Af bizman shalokeach ocho peros mutter, even if they would have Reuven, the lender, who potentially could be the purchaser of the field, even if he is given the right to consume peros from the field in the interim, that would not be an issue. For true, it's possible that Shimon will pay the money back, in which case, yes, the payros would be an interest payment. It would be an additional payment above and beyond the principal to Reuven. But since we didn't know from the outset that that's necessarily how things would play out. This is simply outside of the scope of the prohibition of ribis. It's not prohibited at all. Rabbi Yehuda then sought to corroborate his opinion from an actual case. Amar lehem Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda argued to the Chachamim. He said, Maisa Baisos ben Zunin. There's once an actual case involving someone, Baisos ben Zunin, Shasa Sadeu Mecher, Alpir Belozer ben Azariah, Velokech Ocho Perusaya. Rabbi Yehuda claimed that under the auspices of Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah, this person, Baisos ben Zunin, did exactly such an arrangement with his creditor. He gave his field to creditor and said, if I can't pay the money by such and such a date, the field is yours. But if I could redeem it, the field goes back to me. And Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of the story was that in the meantime, the bearers of the field were granted to the lender. Again, this was under the supervision of Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah. So Rabbi Yehuda said, we see that Elozer ben Azariah agrees with my opinion that it's not ribis in this case because it's only tzal echad beribis. We don't know that it'll end up being ribis, and therefore it's not an issue. But Amrulo, the Chum said back to Rabbi Yehuda, Misham Raya, can you bring any kind of proof whatsoever from that case? You cannot, for we disagree with the way you're reporting the facts of the case. And our understanding, just the opposite. Mocher Ochel Peres Hoya Velo Lokeach. It was Baisus Ben Zunin who continued to enjoy the Paris of the field in the interim, not the creditor. So no way does that incident to prove your opinion correct, that we could even allow the creditor to take a Paris from the field in the interim. And the Gemara articulates, Ma'binai, what does this dispute, Chum Rabbi Yehuda, come down to? Amar Abaye, comes down to the issue mentioned above of Tzad Echad Beribis Ikabinayim. They're arguing about the law that applies in a case of so-called Tzad Echad Beribis, again, where it's a mere possibility, depending on what happens. There are two possibilities here. If it goes one way, yeah, it will be ribis, but if it goes another way, it wouldn't be ribis. It would emerge that you're retroactively the creditor of purchase the field from the beginning, not ribis at all. It wouldn't be a loan, it would be a sale. In the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, such a transaction is permitted, whereas according to the Chachamim, it is not permitted. The Gemara presents a slightly different understanding of the dispute, which somewhat tempers Rabbi Yehuda's novel opinion of Tzad Echad Beribis. That is, Rava Amar. Rava said that, no, ribis amanas lahachzir ikabinayim. The Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing about a case in which the parties stipulated, they addressed the possibility that the borrower would ultimately pay up, which again would mean that the whole time this was a loan, and therefore any payros that the lender took from the field in the interim would be additional money on top of the principal. Rava says the case here is where the parties addressed the possibility, addressing the ribis issue, and they agreed that in the event Shimon does pay back, and Reuven, the lender, will have to return any payros or the cash equivalent that he had taken from the field in the interim. The Chachamim say that doesn't help, in the same way that if somebody would stipulate, I'm going to go steal from somebody and then give it back to him, that doesn't prevent it from being fully forbidden. So here too, does it help to say that if after the fact turns out that Reuven took ribis from Shimon in the form of the payers in the field, he'll return it, that doesn't make it okay. But Rabbi Yehuda argues that no, with this stipulation, it does make it okay. In other words, when they came to this agreement, it was certainly not an agreement to charge ribis, because first of all, there's a significant possibility that Shimon will not pay the money, the agreed upon date, in which case this isn't ribis. For it would emerge then that this wasn't a loan at all, it was just a sale. If in addition to that, the parties address the other possibility that, okay, if Shimon does pay back, then we're going to agree now that Reuven will have to pay any payers he took back to Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda holds that that's good enough to remove any kind of ribis issue from this case. But the point is that Rav understands that even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's not an automatic dispensation or the fact alone that the transaction won't necessarily end up as ribis. You need the additional step of that the parties addressed the possibility of ribis and said that if it turns out that way, he'll return the ribis. By doing that, it makes it not ribis to begin with. And we saw above that Rava rules in accordance with Rabbi Yanai. We said, Mali hein mali demehen. That is that if a person had placed an order and made payment to take delivery later for some produce, and let's say there was nothing wrong with the contract itself because, for example, seller already had the produce in question in stock, Biani said that in such a case, the parties are free to update the agreement that the seller delivers some other type of produce for Mali Hain, Mali de Mehen. You know, since the initial transaction was okay, what difference does it make if it's replaced with something else? For if the buyer takes the originally agreed upon produce, he can just convert that into some other form. So why should we object if they want to save time and they agree that the seller himself should deliver that other type of produce? And doing so does not to turn it into any kind of ribbis issue. So Ravi here seeks to apply Rabbi Yana's logic to a different aspect that we discussed when it comes to these situations where a person, you know, places an order, pays in advance for something. It is Amar Rava. Rava said, Hashta the Amar Rabbi Yanai, turning to Amid Beis, Mali Heinu, Mali Demeyan, Amrinan. Now that Rabbi Yanai validates this argument, that when you're at the end of the transaction, at the time of delivery, that we say, difference doesn't make whether he delivers what they originally agreed on or something else. Either way, it's not going to be an issue of ribbis. Rava says we can apply that logic in reverse to the beginning of the transaction, namely to say, Mali demeinu, Mali hei nami amrinan. And in regards to gauging whether the initial order was okay, the same way that, you know, clearly where the seller literally has the produce itself already in stock, that is, you know, glatt kosher. That's a case where obviously there's no ribbis issue. That's, you know, well established. Because, okay, so what that the buyer is not physically taking delivery now? The produce is there, he could take it at any moment. Therefore, from the standpoint of ribbis, we view it as if the buyer already took ownership, and so we don't have any kind of a loan issue, there's no advance payment. He already completed the purchase from the standpoint of ribbis. Rava says we can use like a Rabbiani kind of logic here and say that, well, by the same token, even if the seller doesn't have the produce itself in stock, but if he has the money to go out and purchase that produce, and meaning there's a shahr that went out, there's a going rate. The rate that these parties agreed to is the going rate, so that the seller could just use the cash received from the buyer to go and purchase the same produce. Rava says that Rabbi Yani will say that's just as good. And that too will justify the transaction from the standpoint of ribbis, suposkin al shar shebishuk, and so we would permit placing such an order where he prepays as long as there is a going rate. Even if the seller doesn't have the produce ordered in stock at the time. And Rashi addresses that, you know, seemingly Ravi here is just saying over the mission, Ayin Beis Amid Beis. As we mentioned in the intro, it's an explicit mission that speaks of this concept of a shahr, that once there's an established price, this fact by itself justifies the transaction from the standpoint of ribbis. So Rashi explains that Ravi is coming to give more of a practical definition to this idea, to say that we don't need like a totally universally established price, even if, you know, locally it's just starting to get established, you know, that's good enough. If practically speaking, the seller could use the cash and purchase the produce in question at the agreed upon price, then that's good enough. And the, you know, Rav is giving us sort of the logic of it is that Mali Demeyan and Mali Hain. Again, the same way that we clearly understand that if the seller has the produce itself, there's no issue from the standpoint of ribbis. Well, then we shouldn't have a problem either, as long as the seller has the money. I mean, the buyer just gave him the money, so what's the difference? Okay, he doesn't have the produce itself, but the seller could go and buy that at the going rate. Therefore, in this case too, we say it's as if the buyer already took possession, so his stuff went up later, so what? That's nothing to do with ribbis, it's not an issue. But to Ace Vera Papa Verafuna Breder Vyoshua Lerava, Rav Papa and Rav Huna Breder Yeshua challenged Rava from the Brisa of Rabbi Yishai that we saw above. That Brisa stated again that if Reuven originally ordered wheat, then they changed it to wine, they changed it to oil. Kulam im yesh lo mutter. All these transactions are permissible if Shimon had the ordered produce in stock at the time. But im ein lo aser. But if not, Shimon didn't have that either a wine or oil in stock at the time of the updated agreement, it would be forbidden. But according to Rava, why? Why don't we say Mali Demein or Mali Hain? That, you know, so what? That Shimon doesn't have the produce itself in stock. We should say it since there's a shahr, there's a going rate for that price, that he could go out and buy that. So that should be good enough, according to Rava. So as Rabbi Shai's brothers say that no, it's forbidden in this case. Amaluhu Rava answered them that the case of Rabbi Shai's Bryce is fundamentally different. for Hasam Halva. That, of course, the key point of Rishai's Braisa is the fact that when they updated the order to an order for wine and later to oil, Reuven at that time didn't give Shimon any cash for that. They just agreed that Shimon will pay Reuven for the prior debt he owes to Reuven in the form of the wine or the oil. So in that case, Rava says, I agree that the fact that there's a going rate, there's a shahr, doesn't help, because you're very nice, you could go and get the produce for that price, but you need money to actually purchase it. Shimon doesn't have money. He's trying to deal with his debt over here. So Rava says, I agree that in Rabbi Shai's case, it's not permitted, whereas Hachazvini, over here, we are discussing where Reuven is making a cash payment to Shimon at the time of the order. And we're saying that even if Shimon doesn't have that produce in stock, but if they're doing this order at the going rates, so that Shimon today could go and take the money and purchase the ordered amount from a different merchant, so then that's fine. That's the equivalent of Shimon having it in stock, and therefore we say it's as if, you know, upon this order, Reuven already has possession, so that there's no advancing of cash, or there's no loan happening, and there's no ribbis issue. The Gemara now presents an alternative explanation for why the existence of an established price for the ordered produce could you justify the transaction, could remove any issue of ribbis. It is Rabbi Rav Yosef, Damri Tarvayu, Rabbi Rav Yosef, said as follows, "My time, Omer Rabbanan, poskin al shar shebashok, v'yafal pishein lo." Why did the Rabbanan say in the Mishnah in Beis HaMebeis that ordering produce, paying today to take delivery later, is permitted if they're doing the purchase at a going rate? The price for that produce has been established already. If the transaction is then permitted, there's no ribbis issue, even though the seller doesn't have that produce in stock. Rabbi Yosef explained the reason is the Omerlei. The buyer may argue that what you're telling me that I'm taking ribbis for advancing this cash, Shekila tivusich v'shadja chizri, toss that favor on the thorns, the equivalent of saying, don't do me no favors. That is, Reuven says, Maya honestly, how do you want to say that you, Shimon, benefited me in exchange for advancing the payment? Why, Yahavu li zuzi biyadi, if I would never have given you this payment, I myself could have obtained the produce that I ordered in some not too far place like Hini and Shili. These are places close to Rabban Rav Yosef's city of Pampadisa. So the point is that Rabban Rav Yosef, you take a different angle here. Up until now, the focus was from the perspective of the seller. And the fact that there's an established price for the produce makes it easy for the seller to go and purchase that himself. And therefore, it's equivalent to the produce being in stock. And once we say it's in stock, it's not an issue. Regarded as if the buyer already took possession. Rabbi Rav Yosef are saying that once this is a shahr, once you can go to a different merchant and get the produce in question at the same price, the buyer is able to say that I didn't really, you know, benefit for advancing this cash, because I could have chosen just not to advance the cash. I could have bought today at the better price from somewhere else. The fact that I agreed with this particular merchant to take delivery later, and the fact that later the price went up, does not amount to a benefit to me. I'm in the same place I would have been had I not advanced this cash. For once again, I could have then used my money to purchase at the better price. Omli Abayla Rav Yosef, Abayi, question of Yosef. He said, Elamayata, according to your reasoning, you should say, Mutra Livo Sa, and there shouldn't be any issue for a person to lend out a saw's amount, let's say, of grain, to be paid back later with the same amount of saw of grain. We know in reality that transaction is deemed a rabbinic problem of ribbis due to the possibility that the grain in question will go up in price, and then it will emerge that the lender is being paid back, you know, more than the principal. And Abayi Rav Yosef, that according to your logic, shouldn't be an issue at all. Mishum dematzi amalei, the lender ought to be able to argue to the borrower, you're saying you're benefiting me in exchange for this loan I gave you? Shkila tivasich v'shadja chizri, throw your favor on the thorns. You didn't benefit me, the Amrlei, for according to you, so we should say, the lender should be able to say to the borrower that, you know, the test is, what would have happened if I never did this loan? Chitai de kadchi b'akabai? The lender says to the borrower, rhetorically, would my wheat have sprouted and got ruined in the rain if I had stored it and not lent it to you at all? No, I could have just stored my grain, kept it for myself. And if I had done that, I would have been in the same place. The value would have went up, and then it would have been the value of my wheat that went up. So I did not become better off whatsoever by lending you this wheat. Therefore, why should the transaction of sub to sub be forbidden, according to your Yosef Abayest? Amrlei Rav Yosef answered, no, that case is different. Hasim halva, because fundamentally, you know, the transaction you're describing of sub to sub actually is a loan. So that, of course, makes it, you know, closer to real ribis, whereas hachas vini, the discussion here of, you know, being posik on peros is about a transaction which in reality is a sale. It's not a loan. It just, you know, could be construed as a kind of a loan for the fact that he advanced the payment. But for this reason, we're more open to hearing arguments to be lenient. And we have one of those here, this point that the quote-unquote lender, meaning the buyer, didn't to actually benefit from the fact that the produce he ordered went up between the order and delivery. Another question on Rabban of Yosef Amalei, Adem Barabba le Rava, Rada Barabba es Rava, Ayvaha Bayi le Mesev Zuzi le Sofseira. How do Rabban of Yosef argue that the buyer says to the seller he ordered from that I didn't benefit from you, I could have just went to Hini Chili and bought the grain at the current going rate there? But what about the broker's fee? And Rada Barabba, you know, apparently assumes that in the transaction here, you know, with this particular seller, he's not paying a broker's fee. He'd have to, you know, hire somebody to help you find this seller. Meanwhile, if he would have to go to Hini and Shili, Rav Adam Rabba assumes he would have to utilize the services of an agent to pay a broker to find him a seller. So in this sense, he did benefit by doing this order in advance. So why shouldn't this present a ribis issue? Amrlei Rava answered, "Mdekiyayv leinami," that in fact, Rav Yosef would agree that the transaction here would only be permitted if the buyer did add a broker's fee. He has to, you know, pay that to the seller to ensure that he is not benefiting over the fact that, you know, if he went to Hini and Shili, he would definitely have to pay a broker. Another approach of Ashi Amar, Ravashi answers with skepticism that in general a person would require the use of a broker to find the seller. Ravashi argues that in most cases there won't be a broker's fee. For Zuzi de Inchi Inhu of Delay Sav Seruse, the customer's money performs the services of the broker. That is, the sellers find a way to find interested customers. If there's somebody who's willing to pay for what they have to sell, they're going to find them. So Rav Ashi simply denies the premise that in your typical case, a buyer would have to hire a broker to find a seller. And thus, Rabbi Rav Yosef argued here that he did not benefit at all in purchasing from him. He himself could have purchased from somewhere else and you'd take an immediate delivery from somewhere else. Then his own stuff would have gone up in value, so he in no way was better off by paying in advance with this particular merchant. Therefore, there's no ribis issue here. And provided that it's true that there was already a shahr, he could have gotten the same grain at the same price from a different merchant. Rabbanan presents a teaching also from Rabban Rav Yosef, which pertains to placing an order for produce and the issue of when that's finalized. Rabban Rav Yosef de Amri Tarvayu, Rabban Rav Yosef taught as follows. A high man, the Yahiv Zuzi Atara Harifa, regarding a person who wants to lock in an early, better price for some produce, Tsarach Lis Chazuye Lebedari, must appear at the seller's threshing floor to inspect the produce. Only at that point will the sale be finalized. The Gemara seeks further clarification. The Gemara is Lemai. In regards to what Rabbi Rav Yosef requiring the buyer to go to the produce, go to the threshing floor and inspect it, Ile Mikna, you can't say they mean that the buyer does this in order to actually acquire the produce for halokani. It's simply not true. Appearing at the threshing floor and inspecting the produce is not a kinyan. For that, he would have to, you know, physically take possession of the produce. He'll bring it to himself through, let's say, Meshicha, where it says, Ile Kabuli Ale Mishapara. If we explain that Rabbi Rav Yosef is saying that it's only upon going to the threshing floor and inspecting the produce that then, you know, this order becomes a commitment to the point that if the seller were to back out, he would be subject to the Mishapara curse that we learned in the previous parak. The problem with this understanding is that ki lo mischazi nami makabel le Mishapara. Again, it seems to be not true, for the halacha we learned in Hanzav is that upon payment, the parties are committed on the Mishapar level, we don't have to inspect the produce. No, as soon as the seller accepts payment, if he would just back out, he'd be subject to the Mishapar curse. So it's as of yet unclear what the purpose of this step of, you know, showing up at the threshing floor and inspecting the produce is. The Gemara answers, the Olam Lekabuli Alei Mishapara. Rabbi and Yosef are saying that it is necessary for the buyer to show up at the threshing floor and inspect the produce in order for the seller to be locked in, to the point that if he backs out, he would be subject to the Mishapara curse. Even though normally the rule is that upon the payment itself, the Mishapara curse becomes relevant, but that's not the way it works here. For a Mandi Yayiv Zuzi et Tara Harifa, for this case of a person who makes a payment in the hopes that he'll lock in order at the earlier, lower price, it is customary levetreit lasiyayiv for him to do that with multiple sellers. And people understand that this is the way it works, that in the end he's going to go with, you know, a particular seller. He, you know, tries to get this deposit in and set up an arrangement with more than one, because he doesn't know who it's ultimately going to work out with. And the sellers understand this, and therefore, only if the buyer goes and actually inspects the produce, he shows up at the threshing floor, only then, does the seller actually rely on the buyer and commit himself, and, you know, at that point, he would be committed to the extent that if he were to retract, he would be subject to the Mishapara curse below. But if that didn't happen, the buyer didn't actually show up to inspect the produce, all he did was send in some money, Amar Lay, the seller would have a right to retract and he wouldn't be subject to Mishapara, for he could reasonably argue that Amina, Neshkacht, Peri, the Shapiri, Mididi, Vishakalt. I figured you probably set up an arrangement with other sellers and you found something better with somebody else, so I backed out. And the point is, it's not your really a commitment, even on the Mishapara level yet, in this particular situation. It only reaches the level of that kind of commitment once the buyer comes to the seller, shows up at the threshing floor, and inspects the produce. Amar Ravashi, Ravashi comments, Hashad the Amar Mishum Mismuch Daita. Now that we understand the purpose of this step for the buyer to show up and inspect the produce, that's in order to instill confidence in the seller that this is a real commitment. Ravashi says, this is not the only way to do it. He doesn't necessarily have to actually go to the threshing floor and inspect the produce. That's one way of doing it, but afilu ashkache b'shukav armalei, even if, say, instead the buyer just met the seller in the street and said to him clearly that, I didn't just make you as a backup, you know, I'm committed, I would like to purchase this from you. If he did that as well, samcha daite, it's presumable that the seller at that point relied on the buyer, and at that point it would become a commitment on the Mishapara level. Winner presents a kind of a definition for the prohibition of ribbis. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, Klal ad Rabisa. You want to know the rule of ribbis? You want to know how to tell if in a given transaction there is a ribbis problem? He says, here's the rule. Kol agar natar le aser. If it seems that someone who is advancing cash is receiving a reward for the fact that he has to wait on his money, then that's a telltale sign that we're dealing with some kind of ribbis prohibition. Of course, it's not necessarily going to be a biblically forbidden ribbis. It is a case-by-case thing. We have to look at all of the factors to determine, you know, is this actually a loan? Did they stipulate in advance? Is charging ribbis? Or maybe it's more like, you know, it could be construed as such that it's agur notarle, that he's getting a reward for waiting on his money. But that's really what it boils down to. If you have that element that this person is apparently being rewarded for having to wait on his money, you know, extending this money to the other person in the transaction, and that is going to present an issue of ribbis. Another ruling from Rav Nachman, of Amar Rav Nachman. Nachman stated another ruling on the topic of ribbis. He said, Haiman the Yayiv Zuzi Likira, if somebody gave money to a wax merchant to purchase a number of cakes of wax, Vikazli Daladalit. At the time, the going rate was four cakes of wax for a zuz. Biamrlei, the wax merchant said to this buyer, Yehivna loch hey hey, if you pay me today, I'm willing to agree to give you five cakes of wax for one zuz. Give me a better rate for paying today. The halach is, Isneu gabe shari. If the merchant already has the cakes of wax on hand, he has those in stock here right now, then it's not a problem. For it's then simply a sale where he's offering him a discount. It's not a discount in exchange for advancing cash. What do you mean advancing cash? The cakes of wax are available today. He can hand them over now. If he chooses not to, okay, he may choose not to. But all it is a sale with a discount. But if lesneo gabe aser, if the seller doesn't have those cakes of wax now, then this transaction would be forbidden. For in that case, the discount would be an apparent reward for the agronutter, for this buyer waiting on his cash. He's paying in advance. It's not a sale yet. He's just paying ahead of time. What is that? It's basically a loan. And as reward for waiting on his money, he's getting this discount, so that would present an issue of ribbis. And what I wonder is, pshita, seemingly this ruling from Rav Nachman is obvious, that yeah, clearly, in the last case we described, we're dealing with a ribbis problem. So what new point is Rav Nachman coming to teach here? Gemara answers, lo tzricha de islei ashray b'masa. Rav Nachman is referring to a case, although the seller doesn't actually have the cakes of wax in stock today, he has outstanding orders with suppliers for the cakes of wax in town. He is expecting and waiting for delivery of plenty of wax. He'll have plenty very soon. So, ma'u the same you might have said, akivin de islei ashray b'masa, in light of this, that he's expecting an order of wax to come in soon. And therefore, ka'ach yavu b'ni wa'che'emza mafteach dami. This should be equivalent to the examples mentioned in the Mishnah on Ein Hay, where the seller doesn't literally have what he's selling right now, but he says, I'll have access to it soon. I just have to wait for my son or for the key to the place where it's stored. So the point of these examples is that actually the seller does own the produce that he sold today. He just doesn't right now have practical access to it. The Mishnah rules that fact will not turn it into a ribbis issue. Does not lead us to say, oh, this is an advance payment, so now it becomes a problem of ribbis. Rather, since now he does today own the product that was ordered, it's really just a sale. It's not a ribbis issue at all. So one might have argued that similarly, even if the seller doesn't actually own what was ordered today, but he's expecting delivery of that from his suppliers, that's not a problem in that case either. Maybe that's as good as actually having the produce, so that we could say that this is purely a purchase and he's giving him a discount. And so not an issue of ribbis, kamash b'lan, so Rav Nachman comes to teach us. In fact, the way we assess this case is that kivin the mechas riguvayna, since as of today, the seller has not yet taken delivery of the cakes of wax, he does not even own those as of today, and therefore command lisnei dami. This is considered like any other case where the seller doesn't have what he's selling right now, and as a result, we construe this transaction as a kind of loan that the buyers are paying in advance, and a reward for waiting on his money, he is getting this discount, and therefore this does present a problem of ribbis.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.